All right, it's finally here. GPT-4 has been released, and the amount of GPT in this one is truly mind-blowing. It's almost 4, as you can see in this graphic. So thanks to the Discord members for this meme. We're going to get into GPT-4, into their release, into their technical report, or is it a paper, or is it a research report? One doesn't know. We're going to get into what OpenAI released, what GPT-4 can do, and the controversial methods of the release, namely that they say absolutely nothing about the model. So let me warn you right now, if you expected here for me to make a video like I usually do, where I discuss, you know, how big the model is, how they trained it, what the tricks they used were, and so on, you know, stuff that's usually coming out of a research lab, you're going to find none of that here. This is 98 pages of them saying, we trained a model on data, and it's good, and it's safe, and they spend a lot of time ensuring you that it is really, really safe. And safe not in a way like they previously did, like, ooh, it's safe for humanity, or safe against biases and things like this, but much more safe in terms of you can build this into a product, and you don't have to worry too much that it's going to just whack out and insult your customers. So we now see OpenAI to fully go away from anything resembling a research organization to a product organization. This is a product. You may use it. It probably is quite good for some applications. But yeah, we have to contend with the fact that the big research labs now are going to be more product oriented. I strongly believe that as a research community, we should not accept this. We should be shaming OpenAI for this. And this is, yeah, it's not research. You're now a software shop. That's fine with me, right? But then don't claim openness. All right, so this is called a technical report. They have released two other or multiple other things beside this technical report. Let's see here. They have also released a product page. This is a printout of the product. This is a website where it's product. They have videos of people looking at iPads and going like, ooh. And comparison to ChatGPT, and they claim GPT-4 is a lot better than ChatGPT. They also have released a website that's a research website. They have two websites. One is called product, so /products/GPT-4, and one is /research/GPT-4. And the research website is probably the one that most people have seen or are seeing. So this one is essentially a short, condensed form of the technical report. They're saying, we've created GPT-4, the latest milestone in OpenAI's effort in scaling up deep learning. It's a large multimodal model. So multimodal, saying they accept image and text inputs, emitting text outputs. So in my mind, this is a little bit of a, I want to say, disappointment. And of course, there was no other chance for GPT-4 than to disappoint people, because expectations have been huge, right? But people have been speculating about, can this do video? Can this maybe also emit images and things like this? No, it can take text, and it can take images as inputs, and it can output text. So anything that you're used to from the OpenAI text APIs is still possible, but now also you're able to provide an image. Yesterday, or this morning, depending where you are, Greg Brockman did a live stream for developers where he showed that he could draw a little picture of a website. Like he drew, and he essentially said, okay, here is a website sketch, here is a button, so here is a joke, and then is a button like reveal the punchline, and he just sketched a website like this, really roughly, and he input the picture into GPT-4, and then GPT-4 output the code to make the website, including functional buttons and all. That's pretty cool, and that's now possible. You can take a picture of something. In the paper, they also have various reports of the model reasoning over infographics and things like this. Like, you just screenshot something, input it there, and ask the model about it. So that's pretty cool. the other thing they did, and what surprised most people, is they evaluated GPT-4 on human tests. So no longer, or in addition to academic benchmarks, now these models are more and more tested on human tests. And you can see here there are, I don't know, like chemistry tests and algebra tests and things like this. One that surprised a lot of people, or multiple ones that surprised a lot of people, for example, the LSAT right here. Now, the numbers you see right here are the percentile of the model. So the 88th percentile essentially means if this were a human, how would it rank among 100 other humans? So in this case, GPT-4 would be an 88th in 100 humans. There is specifically one, let me find that. There is a bar exam. So can I find it? Is it not here? Is it not here? Okay. Well, it passes a simulated bar exam with a score around the top 10% of test takers. In contrast, GPT-3.5, that's the older model, score was around the bottom 10%. So this is a bar, like the test for lawyers, and it passes that better than 90% of humans. So people have been saying a lot of things like, ooh, ringing the alarm bells and so on. And yes, obviously these language models are going to be very, very good in terms of, you know, wherever humans have to recant knowledge and write it down in a verbose and elaborate way, those things are really nice for these models. But You have to pay a bit of attention in terms of these human tests, right? These models, they're not humans. And the tests are specifically designed for humans. Like the tests look at where do humans differ amongst each other. And then they specifically test for that dimension. Now that dimension may be something that the models that we train are particularly good at or particularly not good at, but it doesn't necessarily say anything about how they eventually compare to a human when it comes to the actual job. So for example, if you want to be a lawyer, you also have to interact with clients, you have to write emails and schedule appointments. Now, a model may be able to do that, but you also have to understand your clients a little bit. You have to talk to them. You have to make a connection. You have to reason about, you know, what to do next, not only in a legal sense, but in the real world. Every now and then, you may have to climb a set of stairs or an escalator. You know, so there are tons and tons of things that humans have to do that are really important for a job. My examples might be really bad right now, but I hope you understand what I mean. These tests only test where humans differ from each other, right? And evaluating the models on them is nice, is good, tells us about something about progress, but cannot really get to the heart of, is this AGI? Is this, you know, are lawyers going to be unemployed in the future and so on? It's very much like if you were to let computers do a calculation, like brute force calculation test that, you know, you may be doing in lower grades of school, your multiplication tables, and then you go like and get the computer out and the computer destroys the kids, and you're saying, well, that doesn't mean they're going to be mathematicians or even good, you know, quick calculators for that matter. I hope I've made myself clear. You have to pay a bit of attention when you apply machines to benchmarks that are made for humans and which are targeted at specifically seeing where humans differ. That being said, GPT-4 here with a no vision and with vision, as I said, a variant of GPT-4 can include pictures, does outperform GPT-3.5, the older models, almost everywhere or everywhere as far as I can see. So you can see the percentile here in blue, that is the percentile that the older models of OpenAI achieved, and then various times when the newer models really outperform the older models. As I said, the paper and also the website go into detail on that. First of all, the models are better now than the older models, but also giving a few examples like this here. So this is an example for a visual input, saying what's funny about this image, describe it panel by panel. And then GPT-4 goes through and goes panel by panel and explains the humor in this image comes from the absurdity of plugging a large outdated VGA connector into a small modern smartphone charging port. So these are the types of things you can do. The technical report has some more, as I said, reasoning about infographics and things like this. They have a few more examples about mathy things. And then the paper, the technical report, sorry, goes along into what exactly is the limitation and also how they made sure that the model is really, really safe. So they spend a lot of time on risks, mitigating risks. They have a variant called early GPT-4, and I'm assuming that's just the pre-trained model. And then final GPT-4 is sort of the nerfed model, the safety-aware model. And I can't help, but I'm sorry for the printing here. I can't help, but if you look at these examples, I can't help but very often think, I would have really loved talking to the earlier model rather than the final model. But, you know, you can't have everything. The training process here is there's really nothing. They essentially say, we trained to predict the next word in a document, and it was trained using publicly available data, such as internet data, as well as data we've licensed. So it's essentially saying data, right? And then they say, so when prompted with a question, the base model can respond in a wide variety of ways that might be far from the user's intent. To align it with the user's intent within guardrails, we fine-tune the model behavior using reinforcement learning with human feedback. This is a rather recent development in the last few years that you take these human inputs, human demonstrations of how you would like the model to act, and then apply it to a pre-trained language model. So that essentially means the language model is just trained to predict the next words in a piece of text. And with the reinforcement learning, you're really getting it into a mode of being helpful and being assisting you in doing some things. Specifically, the OpenAI models, at least what they've shown in the developer live stream, they have two things. They have what they call a system parameter, and then they have the prompt. So this in the system parameter, and we've already seen that a little bit in ChatGPT APIs and so on, the system parameter, you can tell the model how you would like it to act. For example, you are a programming tutor. Okay, so you can tell it you're a programming tutor. And then in the prompt, you say something like, I don't know, help me debug some code, right? And the model will respect this thing right here and use it as a context to fulfill the prompt or to continue the prompt. So using this system parameter, you have a lot of freedom to say, to specify how the model should act. So you're going to see the system parameter in the APIs if you use them, or in the playground once they make that available. What I found interesting, and this is about the only actually informative thing one can read from these papers and reports and anything they've released, is this. Note that the model's capabilities seem to come primarily from the pre-training process. The RLHF does not improve exam performance. Without active effort, it actually degrades it. But steering the model comes from the post-training process. The base model requires prompt engineering to even know what it should answer, that it should answer the questions. So I've been, I think, commenting on this in previous videos. The human reinforcement learning really is just getting the model into the mood of helping you, into the mindset of being a helper and an assistant. And the capabilities come from the pre-training. There are a lot of people that try to to get these models to learn new skills using this human feedback data. And that's really not the point of it. And I think they're making this quite clear right here that the human feedback, it doesn't really help getting the model to be better at stuff. It just makes it such that you don't have to do extensive prompt engineering and waste context tokens to get it to do things. So that's pretty interesting. They also spend quite a big deal of time on the scaling laws. So maybe first I want to show you in the technical report right here. In the technical report, by the way, they can't really agree what they call this. So on a website that says read paper, on Twitter, OpenAI, people say read our technical paper, read our research paper, read our technical report. I guess they want to call it a paper, but then also not, because they know this is nothing like a paper. This is one long ad. Like this is at most like a white paper you'd find from a company. They here in the scope and limitations of the technical report, they say, given both the competitive landscape and the safety implications of large-scale models like GPT-4, this report contains no further details about the architecture, including model size, hardware, training compute, dataset construction, training method, or similar. So nothing. You're getting nothing out of them. Any sort of semblance of research is gone right here. And don't give me stupid safety implications, right? They're saying it correctly here, competitive landscape. They're saying that first. And I welcome OpenAI for finally coming out and just saying, we want to keep this to ourselves. We want to sell it to you. And we're not even going to tell you what we learned about these models. My guess would be that they've used a bunch of recent advances in the field, like flash attention, like maybe self-instruct a little bit. My guess would be that they've done that, including the recognitions of recent projects on how effectively to trade off data, compute, and model size. And they just, put proprietary data into this and tuned it to their liking. And from that, they got a good model. And now they don't want you to replicate it. So the danger for OpenAI would be, I guess you could compare it to other big research projects, maybe pharmaceutical companies. So they invested a lot of money and effort now into getting a good model. But if they would tell you how to do it, if they would tell you what they learned, you could probably reproduce it with still a lot of money, but not that much money like they spent. So they just don't want that. They want their competitive advantage. They want to sell this. Yes, which is, again, fine, but don't claim your research, right? Don't claim your or open or democratizing everything or sharing, or that you are for the benefit of humanity, because the benefit of humanity would be for the rest of the research community to learn these things and to be able to push the research further in a safe way. Okay, my guess would be that the model isn't actually very big. My guess would be that the model isn't like a trillion parameters big, like people estimated that the models just go larger and larger. My guess would be that they just trained for longer, because in recent paper, that seems to be the most, first of all, that seems to have been the most effective in getting the models to become better. And also, if you make a bigger model, then at inference time, it costs you more to provide that service. But if you make the same size model, but just train it for longer, then at inference time, like we saw in the Llama papers, that will only cost you, the same amount for the model. By the way, the only actual numbers they give in any of these are the prices for their APIs. So that should tell you something. So my guess would be this model isn't actually that large. It's just been trained for longer and in, with proprietary data. And that's where they get the quality from. So yeah, that's just my guess. Also, other numbers they give is when they discuss these scaling laws. What's impressive, I would say, is that they can, so these are, let's say, older models from them or other people, they don't really say, but the guess is that it's older models from them. And they say from this, we could accurately predict what the performance of GPT-4 will be by simply curve fitting here and extrapolating. This, of course, means that you have more security that your investment into training such a big model will pay off, because you can sort of follow the curve right here and determine where you'll end up. So you can make a better guess. Now, here they say compute, but compute is only in fraction. So not even, they don't even tell you how much compute they used. They simply say this is one GPT-4, and then this is, you know, 100 times less, this is 10,000 times less, and so on. This is next word prediction in a code base, and this model here is 100,000 or 10,000 times less compute, sorry. And they have other graphs where they have prediction on coding problems, where they have this 1,000 times less compute. So the best guesses are that GPT-4 uses something between 100, 1,000, or 10,000. I know these are big ranges, but I would guess something like 1,000 times more compute than maybe went into GPT-3, or 100 times more compute. It's not really clear, but it must be in that sort of general range. So from that, we can guess about what they did. As I said, I also don't believe the model is necessarily that much larger, but just trained for longer. This is also very interesting. OpenAI, I believe it was OpenAI who made this inverse scaling prize. The inverse scaling prize asked the community for contributions of data sets where the bigger the models get, the worse they get. And this inverse scaling prize had a contribution called Hindsight Neglect. And it seemed like that was on trend, but GPT-4 reverses that trend. Hindsight Neglect specifically asked the models, it made a bet, it's like, you know, you John can take a bet, John can lose $900 with 90% or with 5% chance, and John can win $5 with 95% chance. So it's a bet where the expected value favors one answer, but then the text says John took the correct answer, for example, but lost, right? So they took the correct expected value, but lost. And then it asks the model, was John's decision correct? And if the model says yes, it's assumed that the model understands that even though John lost, they did the correct thing according to expected value. But if the model says no, then it's assumed to be wrong. To me, that does depend on your interpretation of determinism. Like, clearly, if John lost, it was the wrong decision in some way, even though the expected value was positive. If you're a determinist, never mind. We're getting into philosophy right here. So the technical report is very much the same as the website, but more extensive. What's also funny is that they say GPT-4 was used to write the technical report a little bit, or to do LaTeX formatting. Okay, so many things to talk about here. Please cite this work as OpenAI 2023. Right, this is branding. We're off on I'm usually not a fan of papers with many authors, but I'm more a fan of that than we're now supposed to cite OpenAI. Pure branding. We're like pure branding. Yes. Da 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 da. At some point they say here, GPT-4 was used to help with wording, formatting, and styling throughout this work. And I've discovered it's on page somewhere down. I discovered a mistake of GPT-4. Oh, this one is also funny. What's the unusual thing about this image? The unusual thing about this image is that a man is ironing clothes on an ironing board attached to the roof of a moving taxi. I don't see why that's unusual. That seems perfectly fine in the USA. Yeah, so this is a visual input example. Below is part of the InstructGPT paper. Could you read and summarize it for me? So it seems to be able to do OCR, maybe a bit out of the box, although it is unclear with many of these things how much training data contamination they had. They claim the knowledge cutoff is 2001. Oh, it explains this meme. And it knows what "but unironically" means. They say the knowledge cutoff is 2001, but they say mostly. So no one knows what that means. Literally, no one knows what that means, okay? No one knows what mostly means. Clearly, the model knows more than that. And it's assumed, and people have already confirmed that a lot of these eval sets are also part of the training data of GPT-4. But the paper itself claims not as much. All right, we want to find figure 8. Figure 8 is here. Performance on truthful QA. What irony. So this one right here, I really want to know which of the authors, you know, given that there's only one author, OpenAI, is responsible for leaving a LaTeX comment or a commit message inside of the figure caption. So maybe GPT-4 isn't as good as claimed. If it can't even do that, wow. No, I'm joking. I would like to see, you know, what that entails or who is responsible for this. The last thing I want to talk about right here is their release of OpenAI evals. So this is an actual open source repository, and right here. Oh yeah, Anthropic is also releasing Claude. And Google is releasing an API for Palm, I believe, and integrating it into Google Workspace. So lots of releases this week. But OpenAI released this evals repository. They're saying it's a framework for evaluating OpenAI models and an open source registry for benchmarks. These are benchmarks for these language models. They say, for a limited time, we'll be granting GPT-4 access to those who contribute high-quality evals. So this is, it's open sourcing something, actually. But it's just, please, like, help us get better. So you contribute eval sets to them, and if you do a good job, you get access to their models. Oh, thank you, OpenAI. If you also have ChatGPT Plus, you get limited access to it. And Bing released a blog post saying that if you've used Bing anytime in the last 5 weeks, you've already experienced an early version of this powerful model. So if you've, you know, the demonstrations we've seen out of Bing, very likely they were using GPT-4 behind the scenes. With respect to open source, I invite you to go to YouTube and watch the developer live stream, because at some point Greg Brockman asks the model to write a poem about OpenAI's release of GPT-4, and the poem includes something like "all open source," and I laughed so hard. The irony, and the shot is fantastic. It's Greg Brockman smiling, saying like, "Look what a cool poem," and the poem is just completely wrong. Maybe it's the model becoming conscious and telling us something. In any case, that was my brief dive into GPT-4. I hope this was sufficient for you. The API right now is usable, and there is a wait list for the API where they let you sign up, and if they deem your heart pure, they let you access it. However, the vision access isn't yet enabled. They say you can make text-only requests to the GPT-4 model. Image inputs are still in limited alpha. My question is a little bit, there is a read paper again. My question is a little bit, what prompted them, no pun intended, to release it right now? Why? Because they don't seem to be that ready. Like, the image inputs still aren't here. So it's just a bit of a better chat GPT or a bit of a better GPT 3.5. Was it the German Microsoft exec that already announced it? Or what prompted them? Did they get a whiff of Google releasing their API and Anthropic releasing their API? There's so much stuff going on right here, which would be very interesting to figure out, but we don't know. In any case, this was, my short overview over GPT-4. If you like stuff like this, don't hesitate to join our Discord. We have paper discussions every week, every day even sometimes, about cool papers. And yeah, if you get access, if you have ChatGPT Plus, maybe you can try out the new model. They claim that it can follow instructions a lot better. Who knows? But I would expect, honestly, this is, as I said at the beginning, a bit disappointing, right? What we get is a model that is, you know, better than ChatGPT, better than GPT 3.5, but it's not sort of the revolutionary breakthrough in either performance or multimodality that were speculated about. As I said, there was almost no way to fulfill that, but I still believe in light of all of this, this is a bit of a disappointment. On top of that, the giant disappointment of how they released things. My one of my most watched videos is about GPT-3, and I still remember that paper next to being a very in-depth evaluation exploration, much more than this paper or technical report is. It had also a lot of details around the modalities, around how they train the model, and so on. And it led to, you know, it led to the spur of a lot of development, a lot of open source replications, Eleuther AI, and so on. And this right here, it's just disappointing on a lot of levels. Nevertheless, I believe this may be good in order to build something against. What the world has to contend with a little bit is, are we really happy to send sensitive data? Let's say you're a business. Are you really happy to send sensitive data to OpenAI, right? They state in the paper right here that they have, in fact, trained on real production data. They state that in the technical report somewhere, that they fine-tuned on real production data. On Twitter somewhere, they say, we don't train on production data, but I recall somewhere in these reports, I read that. So, you know, you're essentially relying on OpenAI's word that they're not going to do that when they have clearly done it in the past. Are you comfortable as a business sending your stuff there? Are you comfortable sending your clients stuff there? I think that is a question that the business world will have to answer in the next few years. And it's going to be interesting to see where that goes and what that implies for sort of the landscape of data security and privacy. All right, that was it from me. I hope you have an absolutely fantastic day, and I'll see you around. Bye-bye.